You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. And as we delve into this week's topic, a reminder that some of the content may be of a sensitive nature. Now, here's your host, Des Kennedy.
Hi, welcome to another show of Momentum. It's great to be back with you guys. And we have with us back again this week, Lee Wilmington. And Lee describes himself as a vibing, believing scientist. And the first show, you know, some of the stuff he came out with blew me away. It's amazing. And, you know, and people who believe in God, you know, we don't often get a lot of support in that view. And to have somebody like Lee come along who's, you know, has done lots of research, he's got lots of answers, it's so encouraging, you know, for us who have that faith. Lee is from just outside Canberra at Fernley Park, and so he's joining us on the show. But just before we go back to Lee, can I just remind you guys about MomentumAustralia.org? That's our website. Give us feedback, ask questions, all our podcasts. We're almost at 200 shows. And so our podcasts are all on there. And if you feel like supporting this ministry, please, we'd love you to do that. We run lean and mean at Momentum Australia, which is all good. Momentum Caroline's available. It's 1-800-000-MEN. We're so fortunate to have that number so yeah. Men can easily remember it. Men are not good at remembering phone numbers. And that's available 7 days a week, 9 a.m., 11 p.m. If you want a safe and confidential conversation, you don't have a mate to talk to, please reach out to our Caroline and have that safe conversation. Also, YouTube, TikTok, all are on there. So we're back with Jerry.
We are. Hello.
Yeah, with Jerry, and we're back with Lee.
And if you'd like to support Momentum, go right ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Did I not say that?
Well, you might have, but I just said it again.
Okay, that's fine. That's cool. So Lee, give us a refresh on what we talked about last time, 2 weeks ago, because some of the subjects were amazing and things I had never heard before.
Yeah, so last show we were looking at the difference between evolution and creation, and we picked on science a fair bit last show, but we also need to just have a little relook at creation and our view of the creation story, because the first five books of the Bible, including Genesis, are all attributed to Moses. So the whole story of creation is actually being passed down word of mouth until we get to Moses. So we're talking through all the time pre-flood. Noah and his sons were the only custodians of that information through the flood, and then up until the time through Abraham, up until the time of Moses. So if Moses is indeed the person who wrote the first five books of the Bible, we have to say that is all word of mouth, though I firmly believe the Holy Spirit was involved in writing those books, and they are the inherent non-errant version of the word of God.
Yes.
So I don't have any problems with the factual things there, but just remember that it was written for people who didn't have telescopes or microscopes, didn't know about DNA, didn't know a lot of things that we've learned in science now. So the books were written from a fairly fundamental level of understanding.
Yes.
So you won't hear things about particular events because they weren't something that the people of the time understood.
Yeah.
So they're written to be remembered and passed on rather than being scientific actual facts sort of thing. So we looked at evolution, and I outlined the three major problems that I see with evolution, or the three that I feel are easy to describe to people as the fundamental problems of evolution. And one of them was that you can't create fossils slowly. So only fossils can only be created in major flood events, not the normal annual flood that happens every year. It has to be a major flood event. And one of those we pointed out was in recent history was Mount St. Helens, where actually the eruption of Mount St. Helens created fossils. We looked also at the question of where is your clock when trying to debate as to how old the earth is. And trying to debunk whether it was 6 days or not, and saying that the theory of relativity created by Einstein or discovered by Einstein says that if you put a clock next to the entire mass of the universe, instantaneously after the Big Bang or whatever we want to say created the whole universe, that clock would still be in day 7 just because of the huge amount of mass that you're putting that clock next to, because clocks slow down when they get closer to big, massive objects. Indeed, the clock on the International Space Station runs quicker than clocks here on the Earth.
Is that right?
By a small fraction.
Wow.
A slow, smaller fraction, but they run slightly faster up on the International Space Station because they're away from the Earth.
Further away.
That is amazing.
And then we looked at... Yes, yes. They actually took an experiment. They took three atomic clocks. They left one on the ground, and they put one each in two aircraft, and they flew one westwards and one eastwards. And when the two aircraft landed back at where they started, the three clocks were different.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was just because the movement away from the gravitational body and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So clocks do change time depending on where they are located.
Yeah.
And then we looked at rock dating. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, in the context of the universe, I mean, that's exponentially more, isn't
huge.
It?
Huge. Yeah. Yes.
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 That's crazy. Exactly. This is the huge amount of mass.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you can go next to, like going next to a black hole. It just slows down so much when you go close to a black hole. Not that we've ever done it. And then there's rock dating. And the bad science, I believe, of rock dating. And I do apologize to those who are in that field. But the assumptions and the requirements of having to supply a date when you submit a rock sample, or otherwise you won't get it analyzed, just proves how poor that science is.
Yeah, I mean that's mind blowing in itself. I was totally unaware that that was the case. That you have to tell them the answer before they'll do the research. Mm. You know, that just doesn't make any sense. What's the point?
So the theory of evolution is actually built on a number of scientific facts, and they've tried to piece it together into the theory of evolution. And as we finished up last time. The reason we still teach the theory of evolution, even with all its problems, is that the theory of evolution is the only non-God answer that science has.
Yes.
Yeah, science has. Yeah.
And one of the things that I started with my training in physics and the things that I've read and all the rest of it is come up with an alternate theory, because we've got the theory of evolution. So I'm just proposing an alternate theory that fits all those scientific facts together. And actually, I believe, is a better fit for all the science that evolution uses to prove evolution.
Right.
And that is the theory of a meteor strike. The idea that the Earth actually was, before the flood, a larger Earth with a more universal climate and all the rest of it, and that when the flood occurred, a major strike on the opposite side of the planet occurred.
Right.
This would then cause, so if a major chunk of the Earth was taken out from one side, the rest of the crust on the Earth would break apart and try and reform around the molten core.
Right.
So suddenly all the plate tectonics can all occur at one time. We've got the idea that maybe that chunk came off and formed the moon. And yes, scientific analysis has found that the materials that make up the moon is the same materials that made up the Earth. That you've got things like the pterodactyl, which is one of the flying dinosaurs that they've discovered bones for, could not fly in today's atmosphere.
Oh.
The atmosphere has to be denser for that animal to have flown. And the way to have a denser atmosphere is to have a larger Earth.
Ah.
So you've got then the idea of, yeah, so the pterodactyls couldn't fly in our current Earth, so you've got a larger Earth. And the idea there that that would then have a denser atmosphere.
Yes.
So it could fly in a denser atmosphere. And then you have the idea that that denser atmosphere, all the plants and everything would be watered by the atmosphere. So you didn't have a rain cycle before the flood. Mm,
mm.
So when Noah was told to build an ark because it's going to rain for 40 days, what we don't have in the Bible is Noah's answer, what is rain? He may not have even known what rain was when he obeyed God's command to build the ark. Now, some people have said, oh, it couldn't have been a meteor strike because a meteor strike would be an extinction event. It would cause every living thing on the Earth to die. Well, guess what? everything did die in the flood of Noah, except, what was it? 8 people and a whole bunch of animals on an ark, only because they had obeyed God and built the ark. Otherwise, it would have been a total extinction event.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm. People complain about the fact that how could the flood occur? Where's all the water gone that flooded the earth? And if you position the globe, if you have a globe and turn it so that you're over the center of the Pacific Ocean, you can only see around the edge what is called the Ring of Fire. Australia on one side, Japan and North America and South America, right at the edge. Almost half the planet in just the Pacific Ocean is water. Yeah. And some places that water is over 5 kilometers deep.
Yeah.
So if you want to know where all the water is, also the water was absorbed with the water and carbon dioxide to create rock, carnivorous rock. I'm getting the name wrong there. But anyway, when you mix carbon dioxide and water, you can create rock out of it. So if you also look at the question of, well, where was there a flood or not? Every ancient culture has a flood story.
Wow.
That's true.
Yeah. Yep.
There is no question that there wasn't a flood.
Even
you Australia. You can't find an ancient culture that doesn't have a flood story in it somewhere.
Wow. Wow. Right, that itself is crazy, isn't it? So we're going to take about a short break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about the science's fundamental assumptions when we come back after this short break.
You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
Momentum Australia is proudly brought to you by station sponsor Bible League. Bible League is a global, not-for-profit organization providing Bibles, biblical resources, and training to the under-resourced church in 70-plus countries worldwide, as well as working right here in Australia, particularly in Aussie prisons.
Bible League is supported by a wide range of churches and individuals. Your support will continue to spread God's word, transform lives, and help introduce people to Jesus.
Partner with Bible League right now by calling 1-800-800-937 or going online to their website, BibleLeague.org.au.
You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
Hi, you're back with Momentum, and we're talking with Lee Wilmington, and it's a great conversation, man. You're a very clever boy, and it's really, really cool, and you've done your own research, which is just amazing. And so just before the break, we were talking at the high level about rock dating. Lee, tell us in a lot more detail, if you can, that people will understand what you mean by rock dating. What does that mean?
So the process of rock dating is to try and understand how old things are.
Right.
We do actual dating of living tissue as well by the same process, the radioactive decay of carbon, because in the natural environment with carbon, there is a given percentage of it that is actually radioactive, that actually decays. And with living organisms, the assumptions there are a little better in that while you're alive, you're breathing in and consuming stuff that has carbon in it.
Right.
The food you eat and all the rest of it.
Yes.
So when you're consuming that food, you're consuming carbon that, and a certain percentage of that is radioactive. And so when you die, you stop taking that carbon in.
Yes, makes sense.
So the point of your death, or the point of the living organism dying, it stops taking in the carbon.
Right.
So then as the radioactive carbon starts to break down, go into its child element, then it's not being replenished.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So measuring that lower level of radioactive carbon gives us an idea about the dates, how long it was since an organism died.
So
with rock dating, we use three different elements that are radioactive. And again, we know the rate of decay. And so the idea is that if the rock had a certain amount in it, and we can measure how much that has decayed, and so therefore get an idea of how old the rock is. But the problem we've had, as we were describing before the break, is that the first assumption that you use for rock dating is that you only have parent material in the rock for all three elements. Absolutely impossible. It can never happen when a rock's created. And so they use that. And where it breaks down, and one of the classic examples of where rock dating, the science of rock dating is broken, is in the layers of the Grand Canyon in America.
Right.
They're in the wrong order.
Oh.
You've actually got the younger layer below the middle layer with the oldest at the bottom. The actual layers in the Grand Canyon are in the wrong order. What makes the science of rock dating even more, I want to say laughable, but not really scientific, is that when you submit a rock for dating, they will not date the rock unless on the form that you submit the rock with, you put in how old you want the rock to be. And then they'll go and look at the three elements and try and find out the one that is closest to the date you want the rock to be.
You're kidding me.
They will not date the rock without you first putting a date on of how old you want the rock to be.
That is just unbelievable. Why does science then, not tell the truth about that? I mean, because they talk to the Grand Canyon all the time and the layers in the Grand Canyon. But, I mean, they're totally misleading people. Isn't that true?
They want an older Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The rock dating gives them the ability to say that the Earth is a lot older than it is. Or, they just want an old Earth for that there. So,
and therefore, no God.
Yeah, they need you to have the date. Sorry, I'm losing myself. They need you to provide a date before they will actually do the analysis on. And if you go and take a rock, say, from a recent lava flow out of a mountain and go and have it submitted, they say, oh, no, that rock's too young to date.
And it's actually full.
They just won't, they won't date it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah. So the whole need there for it to be an older.
So when you say they won't date it, is that because it's been, I mean, it's lava flow, it's brand new, or is it, or can you get it? Okay. So you, if a rock's been burned, obviously.
Then we have the thing then of now how we, and one of the things that annoys me a little bit with using this rock dating is they're now trying to tell Aboriginal people that they've been around here for 60 million years.
Yeah.
Now, nobody survived the flood, Noah's flood.
Yeah,
we're all descended from Noah.
Yes.
So they haven't been around for that long. They're using the rock dating methods that they've got for the cave paintings and all the rest of the Aboriginal people.
They say
you've been here 60 million years.
They haven't.
No.
No one has, as you said.
Not happened.
It's amazing that the world government, United Nations, whoever, have totally taken over control of the facts, and people are believing it. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. So what else in that rock dating do you find disturbing?
Sorry, repeat.
What else do you find in the rock dating area that is disturbing for you? Or is that enough?
Yeah, I think that's enough. Sorry.
I mean, it's crazy. Let me ask you a different question. Do you think that it's being done deliberately? So it's not just wrong science, and it's not just a mistake. It's actually a deliberate attempt to change the way we think about the world and how it was formed.
With the problems that we've got with evolution and the things that we can prove that evolution is correct, we still teach evolution today because it is the only non-God answer science has.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
it is
very,
the
very true.
Only thing that they can come up with that doesn't require a higher being,
that doesn't require
someone that we need to be answerable to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really interesting that, they have all these theories that can be proven to be wrong, that they're using to prove that God didn't exist. And I find
they're trying to do that.
I mean, I find that fascinating because, I mean, before I became a Christian in 2011, you know, I absolutely believed in God because for me, it was much more logical to believe in a creator than to believe that all these things happened by accident. And it's purely a logical argument.
And the whole requirement for them to say that if you've given enough time, then the modifications to DNA and all the rest will bring about these new species. There is not enough seconds in the universe, even if there was 1,000 modifications per second, for there to be enough random activities to create new forms of life.
Yeah.
There's just not enough time. It just can't happen that fast.
Wow. I mean, that's interesting. So actually, I heard an interview with Elon Musk, and somebody asked him if he could build a rocket that could travel at the speed of light, and he sent it off from Earth. Could he reach the end of the universe if time was no limit? And his answer was, it was an amazing answer. His answer was, they can never get to the end of the universe because the universe is expanding greater than the speed of light. And I'm not sure whether that's right or wrong. That's just what I heard.
Yeah. And I can't get my brain around that as to if nothing can travel faster than the speed of light, how can the universe be expanding faster than the speed of light?
Good point.
Sort of thing. That's... It just doesn't comprehend in my brain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe there is something, I don't know. I'm not even going to go there.
He was correct in saying that the universe continues to expand.
Yes.
He was correct in saying that because that's what we know.
Yes, that's true.
Never stopped.
Well, this has been a really interesting...
There's fun things happening in the universe in this search for dark matter and stuff like that is because they've observed galaxies that are rotating, but are rotating... They need more mass than what they can see for the way the galaxy is rotating. And here I'm going to throw a real curveball at people and say the actual solution they found for this is that you don't need dark matter if you allow the space that the galaxy is in to also rotate. So you can have, therefore, the space around a galaxy rotating different to the space around another galaxy, to be rotating different to a space around another galaxy. It solves all the mathematical problems and you don't need to search for dark matter anymore.
Because everything's moving.
It raises a question of what happens when these different pieces of space intersect.
Meet, yeah.
When they're spinning at different. So there's a whole thing there that just blows my mind that there are solutions and things out there that are, it's still a bit weird.
Yeah. This has been a great show, Lee. Thanks so much for your time for this show. We're going to get you back for the second show. And so for folks, guys, don't forget our website, MomentumAustralia.org. Don't forget our Caroline, guys. Don't do life on your own. 1-800-000-MEN. That's 636. Thank you, Jerry. And thank you, Lee. It's really cool.
Welcome.
We'll be back with this next show in a couple of weeks.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to MomentumAustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey and to get in touch with the team at MomentumAustralia.org.